are, and then all of a sudden I'm watching MLB, and there you are talking to the folks on MLB Network. You had quite a week.
A busy week. You know, it was a little hectic, a lot of hoopla. And I appreciate it. Look, the recognition of winning 2,000 games, of course, you know, I was just part of it. But to have that longevity and be with the same club, it doesn't happen very often. So I'm really grateful to a lot of people because it takes a lot of people in this organization for me to be able to accomplish that. You think about the general managers. You think about the managers that were open to keeping me on staff, the GMs, you know, good players. That's the thing that's great about the Giant organization and ownership, if I can say, is they always give us the resources to compete. And so I'm just really grateful to be here as long as I had, and we've won as many games as we've had with all these great players.
Boy, but you had a nice ceremony with the team and with Cap and everyone else. Tell us about it on Tuesday night.
Well, after the game, they caught me by surprise. You know, obviously they were aware of it, the clubhouse staff and Cap, and I guess Cap wanted to honor me. And you know, we have celebrations after every wins. You know, we have the music blaring, we got the confetti going. You know, they have a little celebration, and then when that was done, you know, James or one of our clubbies grabbed me and said, "Hey, whoa, they need you out here." So I went out, and everybody was there, and Fernando Perez read a little poem. You know, he's real good. He's good on the video. He makes a lot of our hitters' videos to send messages across. And he headed that up, and I said a couple words, and that was that. But it was very appreciated. Anytime your peers recognize a milestone in your career, you're very grateful.
No, it was great. It was great. I'm glad you got that recognition. And as I say, every time I turned around, there you were talking on TV. And you said something that was interesting on TV. Because, of course, Matt Vasgersian and the folks want to know about this Giants team. And they asked you what the strength was, and you went through some of the ups and downs of the season, talked about Farhan, and you talked a lot about analytics. And, you know, I said to myself, we use the word analytics all the time, Will, but it's a big part of Giants baseball. What are the analytics that you talk about that are so successful for this ball club?
Yeah, well, it's pretty deep, and it's technology, and it's a lot of other things as well. It's a philosophy, and if I give you a couple of examples, I guess I would start with the pitching. You know, when I first started, you know, pitching coaches would they'd videotape the pitcher throwing, and then they put the VHS tape in, and they try to rewind it and look at him in slow motion and see if he's, you know, stepping the wrong way or if he's getting ahead of his arm. But, you know, things have evolved so much now. You know, there's so much data, and basically it's information. There's these high-speed cameras that can grade, you know, not just velocity, which everybody, we always look at the radar gun, but it can grade, you know, the depth on the pitch, the movement on the pitch. It's like the biomechanic programs, video programs that have come out over the years where they can look at the delivery and you can overlay them and see what they're doing wrong. So these new cameras and believing in this is where it starts. So there's so much data that can help you coach and give you information to evaluate and also improve the pitch. So when you're throwing, you can try a different grip and you see if it breaks more or if it moves more. So that was always done with the eye test or with lesser technology, and so that's a big part of it with the pitching, and you know, how we use our pitching, I think, and how we use our rosters, another part of it. You think about platoons. You know, you used to get a lot out of a guy. You don't have a guy who's a so-called everyday player, and you platoon him, you match him up, right? The righty against the lefty because he hits lefties, and the lefty against the righty. Well, we've been able to do that for the most part, and a lot of these teams have, to get the most out of what you have on the field. I mean, you definitely need everyday players, and they should continue to play. But when you don't have that, you know, all-star quality player, you match up and you manipulate the roster, and you get the readings there. And you get the same readings with the hitters, right? You can get the same information with the swings. You can rate their bat speed. You can look at their swing path. And so a lot of the analytics, I know we throw that word out there. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of examples how the analytics help you evaluate the players and their stuff. And then you still use the eye test, and you still have to manage the player. But, you know, I can go on and on. I think the off days, when you platoon, you look at, you know, even our star players that get more off days because you have a decent option in another player. You look at our roster and what Farhan has done. You know, you used to have your nine regulars, and then you had your bench. And if one of your regulars went down, you're really going to miss them, and you still do. But we have depth. We have guys on the bench that can play and can hit and can match up. So you're not losing as much day in and day out. And I think those are some examples of how using the data and the information helps a baseball team be better.
Well, it's certainly done a lot for the Giants, I'll tell you that, because it's been that way for the whole season, and the analytics of Zach Littell, how he throws the ball and where he throws it. We saw it in his last few outings. So it really does help. So I'm glad you got to explain that, because we use that word so much. We also use the word of Houdini, who was the great magician. And I thought Crawford last night was Houdini when he tagged the guy with the glove, and I think with the ball, but somehow he made it happen. I don't know how.
Yeah, Marty, what a play. I watched it, you know, in real time, and then I watched the video on the board, and, you know, it was the best sleight of hand magic trick I've seen in a long time. You mentioned Houdini. I still don't know, you know, where the ball was when he tagged him. And what happens in rundowns sometimes, you know, that wasn't a rundown, but in a way it was. He was running the guy down, he went to tag him. You know, when we do rundowns in spring training, about 50% of the players, when they go to tag the guy, they tag him with the glove. And then they put the ball in the glove and they tag him. Then they got to reach in and get the ball out and throw it again, which is another movement. Well, in Craw's case, it's kind of where he ended up with, you know, with the runner, where he was at, the side he was on, and he had to try to tag him with the glove before the guy went by him. And I don't know what he did with his hands, but watching the replay on video replay, he clearly touched him with the glove, and the ball wasn't in there. But somehow nobody could really pick it up and see, because he put his hands back together. And I don't know. It was just the strangest video play I've ever seen, and I still don't know what he did.
Very good. Well, the wind has been a factor, though, at the ballpark. It's interesting now. The ball goes up in the wind. I don't remember, of course, Candlestick, and you remember Candlestick. It was crazy. But this place, wind wasn't such a factor. But now Longo hits a ball. What do you tell fielders now, having to deal, you know, you got new guys coming up, Estrada comes up. What do you tell them about having to deal with the wind here?
Well, it's certainly a home field advantage into the fact that we're used dealing with it. I mean, we know the winds here. And one of the first things I always did with new players and rookies coming up is get the Ponza machine out and shoot pop-ups from home plate, because it gets up in the wind and it does different things. And when you get a pop-up on the right field, first base side of this field, it really pushes back towards the field more than a normal field. With the spin of the ball, I mean, it can come back onto the field to play 20, you know, I've seen it come back 30 yards. And knowing that is real, real important. And playing here routinely, you know that ball is going to have that movement. And you look at Colorado and these other teams that come in, it doesn't happen unless you have extreme wind conditions. And when you have extreme wind conditions in the Midwest or in the East Coast, you see people missing pop-ups there too. I remember in New York, the wind was blowing in about 60 miles an hour, it seemed like. There was a routine fly ball to left field, and I can't remember if this happened to us, and you expect the ball to go out, you know, the regular depth in left field, and it landed right behind shortstop, and nobody caught the thing because the wind was blowing so hard. So it's hard for the visiting teams. We know what the ball's going to do. We practice it a little bit, and just by playing games here, it helps us perform.
Well, you talk about defense, and as I look at it, I think about it, and it's right field, and they put Brian out there last night. This right field is not easy to play. It's not an easy right field.
You're right. It's a tall order. He's played all over. He's played more left and he's played a little center. But, you know, you go back to the analytics, you know, that term, and you're all about, you know, it's more offensive approach of putting players in a position or your lineup and putting the nine guys on the field that are going to help you drive in runs. And I think that's another part of it to where years ago, you know, there was a lot more thought about defense and, you know, can the guy cover the field? Can he play the position? Well, I think the offense kind of rules the day now to score the runs, and then you make your changes if need be. But you're right about right field here. It is, for me, the toughest right field in baseball because that wind comes around and pushes the ball towards center field. You have that brick wall, the Levi's Landing. It's extremely it's tall, and it's short, 309. So, you know, that ball Bryant had last night, the wall comes into play very, very early. Then you got the wind. Then you have triples alley. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of nooks and crannies. There's a lot to deal with out there. And the more he plays there, the more comfortable he will get.
Yeah, not easy just to put somebody out there, I'll tell you that. Hey, we're coming up to an anniversary of 2003. The massive blackout in the Northeast. The Mets, Giants are postponed. What did you guys do? I remember the blackout. What happened?
Yeah, no, I can't believe it's the anniversary. I remember that like it was yesterday. Of course, at the old Shea Stadium, when you go in the clubhouse, there's no windows, right? It's kind of in the belly. It's in the belly of the stadium. And you go into the clubhouse, and there's all these different rooms, and you know, it wasn't very big, but you had these different rooms and small rooms to go into. And we were in the clubhouse and before the game, and all you know, boom, all the lights go off, and this clubhouse was pitch dark. You couldn't see a foot in front of you. And finally the clubbies got some flashlights and stuff, and they got some lighting in there, but it took a while. You had to keep your hands out so you didn't run into a wall or run into somebody. So you know, Felipe had the best line when I kind of wandered into his office in the dark and, you know, what the heck's going on? And Felipe goes, that was a time when we weren't scoring a lot of runs. You know, we didn't have a lot of power. And he said, the power outage has left the field and moved into the building.
He's the best.
That was a great line. Yeah. He's the best.
Isn't he?
Yeah.
His stuff was classic. Classic
it
stuff.
Really
I
was.
Love it. Very good. Okay.
So anyway,
we
went, you know, we stuck around for 2 hours. We finally get outside in the buses, and they didn't know how we were going to get to, they canceled the game, we were going to get to Philly. And I remember we eventually bused to Philly, but the bus driver didn't want to leave. He didn't want to go over the bridge. He wasn't getting the okay to drive with no lights and traffic lights. So we sat there an extra hour waiting for this guy to get the okay to go. And I remember driving past Manhattan. You can see it off in the distance, and it was pitch black. It was an eerie feeling.
Wow. Wow. Amazing. Yeah, 2003. This week, we had the good feeling of baseball, and I said baseball needed it. You know, we've got so much going on with the All-Star game got moved around, and we've got pitchers being examined every 5 minutes. And then they decided to have this game a couple of years ago at the Field of Dreams in Dyersville, Iowa, and it came off beautifully, and it was a nostalgic moment of fathers playing catch with sons or daughters, whatever it was. And I thought of you a little bit, and I said, well, I grew up on the East Coast, and for me, the phrase was, let's have a catch. It was never, let's play catch. Let's have a catch. And for you, I was thinking about it. Did you see some of the game? Did you see the scene out there?
I saw a little bit of the game, and I thought it was one of the best events that MLB has ever put on. I mean, boy, the fields looked wonderful, and, you know, the corn and pitting balls into the corn. Of course, I love the movie. Well, everybody loved that movie, and I didn't get to see, you know, how dramatic the ending of it was, but I thought it was a great event and a great venue, and I really enjoyed just seeing it up there. But you're right, you know, Marty, the have a catch. You know, my dad, we used to go out in the yard with my brother, and that was it. It's not let's go play catch, go have a catch. And I have friends that still say that once in a while, and we play catch for hours, you know, on the side of the house. And, you know, my dad, he played a little bit, and we were teenagers, and he wanted to show how tough he was. He would catch us. He wouldn't catch a lot of pitches, but he'd say, okay, I'm going to catch you barehanded. He'd throw the glove aside, you know, the one with no strings. It's just all fingers, right, in the pocket. There's those big, thick fingers, the older gloves, and he'd throw that aside and get down in a squat, and he'd let us throw our hardest pitch at him, and he'd catch it barehanded, and then that would be the end of catch because his hands were hurting.
But that was the memory, and that's sort of what the movie play. What did your father do for a living?
My dad, he started as a sheet metal worker, and then he became a foreman at, you know, Pratt & Whitney Aircraft. It's they build airplane engines in Hartford, Connecticut. And he did that, you know, basically my whole life until he retired. Yep.
Was he a baseball fan?
Oh, yeah. No, he played himself. A matter of fact, he had an opportunity to sign a professional contract. He had five brothers and sisters in Western Pennsylvania. They were all good players. And my dad passed up the opportunity to sign because he needed to work. And he loved to play. He ended up playing in the Twilight Leagues and the men's leagues in Connecticut when he went over there when he was working for fun. But, him and his brothers, they were good ball players. And it was a big part of their youth, and he gave that love of the game to myself and my brother.
What position did he play?
He played mostly second base, a lot of second base. They moved him around a little bit, but not like they do today. So I'd say second base was his primary position.
All right, very good. Always interesting to hear some of the background. Hey, the Rockies are in town, and that means Buddy Black is in town, and he was a former Giant. I like Buddy Black, and I feel for the guy. Look, this is a team that, if you look at them in Colorado, they could be a first-place team. They're 14-44 on the road, and there's Buddy Black fighting for every inch along the way. I like Buddy Black.
Yeah, my first time I met Buddy was in Kansas City when I left the Pirates after 10 years. I signed a contract with the Kansas City Royals, and I had an opportunity to make their club as a utility guy. And Buddy was on that team. He was one of the mainstay pitchers there with Brett Saberhagen and George Brett and the rest of them. And that's where I first met Buddy. And of course, he became a Giant, so we knew each other a little bit, and I like Buddy. I had a chance to talk to him a couple days ago, and I said to him, I said, how do you do it, Buddy? I mean, you're in Colorado. And he brought it up. He goes, yeah, it's not an easy place to manage. You know, Jim Leland quit managing over there in Colorado.
That's right.
So it's a tough place. You know, the games are long, and he talked a little bit what it took to be a pitcher in Colorado. But you're right. He fights for his players. He's one of the, old school guys left in the game. But he uses information. He's always been on the cutting edge of analytics, and he worked in the front office with Cleveland. Just a solid, solid baseball man, and I like Buddy as well, and wish him all the success when they leave town.
Yeah, this kid last night was a tough pitcher, and you got another tough one today in John Gray. These guys like to pitch in Colorado, apparently.
Well, they learn how to deal with it. As Buddy was saying, you can't be a guy that you give up a couple runs and you get it bent out of shape. You know, you have to be mentally tough. And because you're going to give up runs in Colorado, it's just the nature of the beast. And it takes a certain mentality there and a toughness. And he likes the guys that he has on the mound. And, hopefully they'll rebuild this thing again and they'll get back to some winning baseball. And I shouldn't say hopefully not while we're around. But,
right.
For Buddy's sake, it's not easy going through seasons like he's going through or Arizona's going through, and the bottom line is I don't wish that upon anybody.
Well, the Mets are coming in. Did you go to Met games as a kid?
No, I didn't. We went to the Red Sox games. We were just under 2 hours from Boston, and we were, a Boston Red Sox fan. We didn't follow the Mets, and we were not fans of the Yankees either, obviously, if we were a Red Sox fan.
All right. Hey, let's touch upon River Islands for a second. And I was thinking about all the analytics that you do. In a way, that's what River Islands does. They take the demographics. They look at all the kind of people that live out there, all the different housing units, all the floor plans, and come up with something for you that fits you. It's like a pitcher saying, okay, Littell, if you throw this pitch in this quadrant and an 0-2 count, you're going to get an out. They make something that fits you.
That's a great analogy. They really do. They have something for everybody, and we've mentioned it many, many times on the show. And not just the living arrangements, but the surrounding area with all the water and the activities. And, you know, this pandemic, hopefully this variant, we get it under control. But once again, a lot of people are staying home and are doing a lot of things close to home and where they're safe and secure. And there's not a better place to do that than in River Islands. And, of course, you're close to things where you can get out and do other things. But no, you're exactly right. I guess they're an analytical community. I like that.
I just made that up, actually.
Well, that's pretty good, Marty. That's really sharp. I like it.
I was just thinking about it. I said, that sounds like River Islands. All right, I'm going to give you a name. Bobo Holloman. When you go back in the clubhouse, just tell everyone you know who Bobo Holloman is. He's the last guy to pitch a no-hitter in his first major league start until the kid last night for Arizona, Tyler Gilbert. So Bobo Holloman, that was all he did, and he was gone by the end of the year.
Was he? I didn't know he was gone by the end of the year. I saw those names after the game go up on the TV, and that's the one name that sticks out is Bobo.
Right.
And but again, once again, you outdid yourself with the knowledge that he didn't last very long. So
no, 3-7, Bill Veeck had seen enough of him with the St. Louis Browns, and he was gone, never back to the big leagues. A little bit in the International League, and he is long forgotten until someone threw a no hitter in his first major league start. The kid last night, Tyler Gilbert. So you can wow Kai Correa and the rest of them. Antoine, and let them know that you know who Bobo Holloman is.
Well, Marty, thank you. That's the first thing I'm going to talk about when I go in. I'm going to give him a little history lesson with Bobo.
Okay. All right. Well, have a great day today, and I love having you on, and be well, and congratulations on the 2000.
Thank you, Marty. It's always great being on the show.
All right. That is our third base coach of the San Francisco Giants. Bill Lasky joins us. Bill, good morning. How are you?
Good, Marty. How are you?
We're doing fine. It was a crazy night of baseball last night, as I was just talking to Woe about this. Bobo Holloman and Tyler Gilbert and Matt Moore and Taiwan Walker. And it's the middle of August, and this is when these baseball stories happen.
They sure do, and you get some well-pitched games, and then you get double-digit runs in some of those games last night. And going back to Tyler Gilbert, the first no-hitter in Arizona at that stadium, and that was surprising when you had Randy Johnson, Curt Schilling, and a lot of the great pitchers that pitched in an Arizona Diamondback uniform. But it was good for a kid like that having his first start. He was a reliever, and they put him in there, and boy, did he do a great job against the Padres.
Yeah, and the Giants lose it to a tough pitcher last night. He threw what you always talk about, and that is first pitch strikes. He got the double plays when he needed it. As a former pitcher, I'm sure you could appreciate what he did last night.
You know, one thing that Freeland did, he mixed his pitches up really well. He threw a lot of changeups in the middle counts, got ahead, as you said, four-pitch mix, changeup. He had a nice sinker when he got the ground ball outs, and I thought he threw well good. And, you know, when we talked about yesterday in the pregame, the lineup, and they had that potent right-handed lineup on, but they just couldn't get a rally going, and when they did, he got the ground ball double play in the three consecutive innings.
Boy, good stuff. How about the power of Crone? How about that?
You know, I saw him in AAA, you know, back when I was doing Rivercat games, and he was mashing a ball. And then, of course, when he was with Arizona, he really didn't do much. And now he comes to Colorado, and he's got a rebirth. But he's got power, and we saw it yesterday going the opposite way to right field. So, player of the week last week, and he's continuing to do it. And I'm glad they walked him in that scenario in the eighth inning. I thought that was a smart move by Gabe. And we'll see what Mr. Wood does against him today.
Yeah, you got John Gray on the other side. Looking a little bit at the Giants and what happened last night, they lose 4-1. Of course, the Dodgers win. And now the Mets are coming in next. But, Bill, the Mets don't hit at all. just not at all. It's incredible to me. And they got a good bullpen, but, boy, they just don't hit.
And both those games against the Dodgers, Marty, went extra innings. And as you said, I mean, Walker had a no-hitter going yesterday, and Smith hits a home run to tie it. And then, sure enough, the Dodgers push forward to win the game. But you're absolutely right. And, you know, we got to look at the schedule and thank MLB because they're playing the night game in New York, and now they have to fly all night and come back. And the Dodgers are playing Pittsburgh, and the Mets play the Giants. So hopefully the flight will get their legs a little down, and hopefully the Giants will take advantage of that tomorrow.
Does that have an effect? Did you have to do that? I imagine you must have had to do that a few times.
Well, back in the day, they used to fly the starting pitcher home that day. And that was one thing they did, and, you know, they did that on a road, too, when you were, you know, at home and you had to fly, because we did a lot of late-night flights. We didn't have that day off to travel back in the day. So that was one thing you did, and, you know, you just present, you know, you're thinking in your mind, hey, I got to go out and throw a good game. You know, everybody's flying here, you're late. You're not going to have that many runs to help you out with. But, you know, I don't know if they do that now. I would love to ask somebody to see if they do push that pitcher, the starting pitcher, home so you get a day of rest. And you don't have those weary legs.
Yeah, so you think it does have an effect, having to fly all night and play the next day?
It does. It really does. And sometimes it doesn't affect you that day. It affects you the second day. Because, the second day is really when you get the tired legs and the lower back stiffness and all the things that you do, especially coming from New York to L.A. and New York to San Francisco. That's a six and a half hour flight. So that's a long flight. Then you get in a hotel and you try to sleep, and that's the tough part.
Boy, interesting. Hey, I got a nice text from Russ Stanley. You know, Russ, our vice president of ticketing for the Giants, a dear friend. Tyler Gilbert is nephew of Cindy Hernandez, who works in the ticket office. She is a client relations and account manager and services all of our season ticket members. So, what a great moment. Did you see the dad and all that stuff last night?
I did. Saw the tears, and that's just an emotional thing, you know, and it was so great. The whole family was there, and the emotions from the family, and it's always great to see your parents at those games because, you know, hey, Marty, you and I talk about it all the time. You drive your kids to Little League, Colts, high school, college. You're behind them all the time, and to see them at the top level of baseball and to consider – doing a no-hitter against the San Diego Padres as a left-hander, too. So a great moment in Arizona Diamondback history.
And for Bobo Holloman, he has company now. I like that. Now he's got company. He got blasted, and somehow he pitched a no-hitter. And this kid last night gave up a lot of hard hits, but they were right at somebody. So good for Tyler Gilbert and Cindy Hernandez. Congratulations to you and the family. And that's good. My sister Renee is listening in Miami as well. Bill, we're doing the contest today. I've got people listening to the show and to you, me, and Carrie, all over the country. Mm-hmm. It's incredible to me. Manteca, Kinsburg, Southern California, Anaheim, Ojai, Natomas, Los Gatos, Lodi, Carmel, San Anselmo, Pebble Beach, Modesto, Pleasanton, Petaluma. I mean, I could go on and on. Idaho. Yeah. It's incredible. New Mexico.
And I tell you what, Marty, the calls on the postgame shows are the same way. They're coming all over United States and different countries. I had somebody from Australia call me last week.
It's very cool.
And, you know, what's great about it, they're Giants fans everywhere, and that's what excites fans when they win. And that's what we need again today. We need them to win from these orange and black.
Who do you have coming up now?
Coming up is John Shea. We're going to talk about the extension from Brandon Crawford and who could possibly next. So he's coming up next on Talkin' Baseball.
Perfect. All right, Bill will be back with John Shea of the Chronicle right after this. KMBR 680-1045, the sports leader.